Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From newsounds.org, it's a remote edition of Soundcheck, our series of live performances and interviews. I'm John Schaefer. The Brooklyn band Pom Pom Squad is more than a punk band, although they are a pretty exciting punk band. They're led by singer and songwriter Mia Baron, who sprinkles surprising quotes and cheeky references to mid-century pop songs and old film ballads in her songs, and their album, Death of a Cheerleader, takes a knowing, ironic look at some of the homey images of American pop culture. We'll talk to Mia in a minute, actually in just over a minute and a half, but that gives us enough time to let the band do their thing. Here's Pom Pom Squad with a live performance of the song called Lux.
It may be something in your tone that you would leave me here to find my own way home. You can take my peace, leave me rotting like the leaves, but I won't ever let you say you cared about me. My collar in your fist, pulling me into your kiss, and suddenly I knew my body was not my own. You push and I give way, collapsing inward like a cave, and I feel naked without taking off any of my clothes. Crowded high school dance in a cloud of peach alcohol, I let myself get drunk on the idea that you loved me. Cause in here I'm suffocating, but out there I feel so small. What a wonder to be anything at all. When I hear your pretty words, I should be listening to the sound of my feet against the ground in the opposite direction. How do you expect me to figure myself out when I cannot tell the difference between bad and good attention? Everybody telling me that life goes on. Meet me tonight in the garage. I'll show everybody telling me that life goes on. Meet me tonight in the garage. Meet me tonight in the garage.
That's called Lux. It's a performance by the band Pom Pom Squad on this remote edition of Soundcheck, outdoors in the backyard. And the band is led by Mia Baron, singer, songwriter, and the cheerleader thing, Mia, I have to start with that. All right. Because, you know, Death of a Cheerleader, the name of the record, Pom Pom Squad, the whole kind of iconography and imagery that you have consistently done in the lead up to and in the creation of this LP.
Yeah.
What is the attraction? What is this obsession with cheerleading?
Basically, I grew up in a very multicultural household. I was raised by my dad, who's Polish. He's white, Polish, New York, born and raised. My mom, also New York born and raised, is Black and Puerto Rican, and moved around a lot. So I think the young woman who I aspired to be or who seemed to be aspirational were the cheerleaders. You know, usually they were white, athletic, popular, strong, beautiful, you know, just found them to be this really fascinating character, mostly because they were everything that I felt I could not be. So, you know, I also grew up on a lot of media. We were a big pop culture household. So my mom was a huge fan of John Hughes movies, and I started watching John Hughes movies at like, you know, 9 or 10. And before you're even in high school, you already have a preconceived notion of what high school is supposed to be like.
Right.
You know, watching movies like that. So it was just a really crazy state of being as a young person. It just left me very confused. And one day I was just like, well, what happens if I just put on the costume? What happens if I just tell myself I am all of these things that I can't be, or put myself in the context of all of the things that I, you know, quote unquote, can't be. And that's kind of where the band came from.
It's interesting because you seem to put yourself in a lot of different scenarios during the course of this record. And I'm thinking specifically of the song Crying, where, you know, if you watch the video, I mean, you're like something out of a mid-20th century Mexican film, you know, like like one of those great old film stars. And they were mostly singers back in those days as well.
I started getting pretty obsessed with, you know, movies of that era and kind of Hollywood starlets and that kind of romance and glamour. I think queer culture is built on aspiration and aspirational media. And I think the Hollywood starlet is this aspirational character. I don't know. I just was very fascinated by that kind of aesthetic and world, and how different it seemed from maybe the, you know, world that my music evokes typically.
Were you aware, as you were doing, say, you know, the video for Crying, were you aware that you were sort of queering the narrative of that kind of starlet image in the same way that you were doing to the cheerleaders with, you know, some of the other?
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. I mean, I think, you know, a huge part of what I do is about homage and about kind of space, I think, as a person who's in the body that I'm in. There's not a lot of space carved out for me, you know, in a way that it may be for my peers. And I think, you know, I actually moved back to New York to act. And there is part of me that is still fascinated with, like, movies and wanting to be in movies. So maybe that was also my little way of sneaking that into my career experience.
Well, then there's also a song like This Couldn't Happen, which to me, you know, has the feeling of a ballad from a classic Hollywood film. Just heard this blast of punk with Lux, and on the same record we get a song like This Couldn't Happen. Do they feel like they come from the same kind of impetus, the same impulse for you?
Yeah. I think maybe something that I tend to be defined by is just being extremely emotional. I feel things, I feel a lot of things, and I feel them very big. And I feel like that's why I was initially drawn to punk music, But I also think, you know, well, this can happen as it's kind of my interpolation of an interpolation of a song. It's Doris Day's version of a song called this called Again.
This couldn't happen again.
And I fell in love with that song. I heard it initially in a hip hop sample, and once I heard the original, I was just like, this is perfect. This is everything to me.
What's more, this never happened before.
Just because it was my favorite moment in the canon of history, which is you grow up hearing a sample and then you hear the original however many years later, and it immediately, like, mind meld, brings these two pieces of music together, these two, you know, eras of your life, or these two disparate, you know, seemingly disparate genres. And I think, kind of in the vein of what you're saying, you know, punk and Motown slash, you know, like Phil Spector, Wall of Sound, mm-hmm. 50s, 60s, you know, sonic worlds feel really different. But to me, they're just built on like a zeitgeist and a lot of feelings.
Yeah. Well, another thing that seems to tie a lot of the very disparate, you know, as you put it, the seemingly disparate sounds on this record together is what you're writing about, which is, you know, a lot of these songs are about women navigating their way through treacherous waters.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, I am a woman navigating through treacherous waters. I think I'm in a particularly treacherous one right now, which is why I'm writing again. But I think I write for the most part to teach myself something. I feel like it's the only space where I can be really honest with myself, even like outside of the, I don't know, I'm extremely introverted, and the kind of introverted I am means that when I'm around people for too long, it's like my frequency is just interrupted. Like I can't kind of make out any sound or word or feeling to describe where I am.
How are you on stage in front of an audience? Does the introversion go away when the mic goes live?
Somehow, yeah. I love playing shows, and I was really good at it before all of this happened. Now I have to retrain that muscle, but I have the rest of my band with me, and I can fall back on something. It doesn't feel lonely in the same way it does maybe when I'm at a party or something.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, Mia, as long as you've mentioned your band, let's give our listeners a chance to hear them again. Can you introduce who's playing with you on the next song, which is one of my favorites from the record, Drunk Voicemail?
I absolutely can. My bandmates are Alex Mercury on lead guitar, on bass, Mariale Dale Figeman, and Shelby Keller on drums. Love all my bandmates. Fantastic human beings. Give them a round of applause.
Yes, Mia Berin is my guest and leading the band Pom Pom Squad. Let's hear this performance of her song called Drunk Voicemail.
Pages of your hands, you play you, it's so easy, walk down.
kiss my cheeks turn red. Wanna tell you that I hate you, but it don't make sense. Cause I think I really love you more than anyone can. Wanna tell you that I hate you, but it don't you lie. Cause I think I love you more than I am willing to try. Wanna tell you that I hate you, but I don't know how. When the truth is that
Drunk Voicemail is the name of that song from Pom Pom Squad, Mia Berin and Company, playing a tune from the record called Death of a Cheerleader. Mia, you said before that, you were writing again because you're going through stuff. We're all going through stuff now. Is that what it takes to get the writing process going?
Maybe. I think some kind of event has triggered everything that I've written thus far. I mean, I think for the most part my identity crises have involved some level of shedding, you know, letting go as opposed to adding on. I think I don't know, my some insight into what I'm going through right now is, like, you know, I think I'm having this realization of a lot of my life has felt like playing dress up. And when I was writing Death of a Cheerleader, it was at a time when I was going through a huge reckoning with my queerness and realizing that I was not romantically interested in men, which is kind of a big thing to shed, you know, after, you know, you spend your whole life watching rom-coms and reading novels, and because I suddenly realized all of the things that were for other people.
So, this idea of kind of playing dress up, with Death of a Cheerleader, that's fairly clear what the dress up is. You know, you've taken on this sort of character, or maybe caricature is the right word, you know, of the cheerleader, this kind of subversion of the cheerleader icon. Yeah. At some point, you know, that's a bit of dress up that you will shed and probably have already in this next batch of songs, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
So what happens to Pom Pom Squad? Do you keep that name or do you shed that too? Is that specific to this project?
I don't have any plans to let go of that name yet, because I do feel like it represents the person who started this whole thing. And that person is still me. You know, it always will be. I think a lot about my 15, 16, 17, 18-year-old selves, that particular couple of years. And I really care about impressing that person and making that person proud. And I think the name is part of that for me. You know, that's something that she came up with. And I want her to always be part of this project.
You know, it's interesting hearing you talk about, you know, the ideas behind the songs, the lyric behind the songs, and then to find a song on the record that you didn't write, you know? And when someone who is so kind of immersed in the songwriting process steps out of it for a moment to play someone else's song, I'm always interested in why that happened. Mm. And for you, on this record, it's Crimson and Clover.
Yeah.
Which, if I'm remembering right, is from the late 60s. Like, I think it was 69, actually.
Yeah, something like that.
So well before your time. How did this happen?
I just love that song. When I was in lockdown, I did go through this whole phase of really only listening to music from that era, from, you know, the early 50s to the late 60s, and that song just really stuck out to me. It's really creepy. It's a really weird little creepy song, and
it's got that weird echo effect on everything.
Yeah. Crimson and clover. But for me, I don't know. I kept kind of imagining it as this like weird horror movie. I don't know. There's just something about it that, you know, gives me this really creepy, panicky sensation that I love. And when I was coming up with sort of the concept of the album as this like queer love story, melodramatic camp horror story, it felt like a really fantastic way to capture the part where you know you're falling in love with somebody and it scares the absolute hell out of you. I've been waiting to show her crimson and clover.
So now that you've started the process for the next record, is a story taking shape, or does that happen after you have a few songs and you begin to kind of draw connections?
Mm. Every record is kind of different. What started Death of a Cheerleader, oddly, was texture. I knew that the kind of overwhelming texture that was coming to me was red velvet and red vinyl, which has never happened to me before. That was something that started with Death of a Cheerleader, really. And this one is kind of coming to me in like color and texture first as well. It started with a couple concepts that I've been kind of, you know, just this really early stages. This is like the first time I've actually ever talked about it, I think.
All right, so we won't hold you to this if it turns into something else.
Exactly. It's going to be 10 years from now. I'll never have released it, and it's totally different. You know, I think right now the period of my life that I'm in is kind of delving more into the person versus persona dichotomy that I've gotten myself in. But I think, honestly, any person who is in public on the internet gets themselves into. It's kind of a dark period for me, and so I'm thinking a lot about darker colors.
So maybe less John Hughes, more David Lynch?
Absolutely.
Mia, I will very much be looking forward to that music when it comes out. In the meantime, Death of a Cheerleader, terrific record from start to finish. Lots of left turns and surprises, and it's been great talking to you and hearing the band perform as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been great talking to you as well.
Another surprise toward the end of the album, this song, Be Good, has a quote from the old song Mr. Sandman built into it. Just one of the many allusions and references to older music in the Pom Pom Squad's record. You can watch the band's live performances on our YouTube channel or right here at newsounds.org. Thanks to our video editor, David McLean, our technical director, Irene Trudell, producer, Karen Havlick, and you for joining us. I'm John Schaefer. See you next time.